This is the State of Things from the Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh. I'm Frank Stachow. Follow me down these steps to an unexplored corner of the museum to reveal nature's greatest horror. Quick, turn on the light. Now, kill the reverb. Well, that's better. For this Halloween episode, we'll hear about monsters, real and imagined, terrible things like vampire squid and fanged frogs. First up, Brian Stewart. He's curator of amphibians and reptiles at the museum, and he is here to tell us about vampire flying frogs. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Brian, we had you on a while back, and you were talking about the vampire flying frog, and we just sort of discovered this creature. Remind us what it was and how it was found.
So the vampire flying frog is a species of frog that my colleagues at the Australian Museum and the University of Science in Vietnam and I discovered in Vietnam on a isolated mountain in southern Vietnam. And it's a gliding frog. And we realized that it was different from all other known species of gliding frogs. And so we described it as a new species of science. And we gave it the name the vampire flying frog. This group of frogs, they have the ability to glide in the forest from one tree to the next to move around. They have extended webbing on their hands and feet, and so they have this ability to fly, or really to glide, as they move about through the canopy at night. But that's not actually why we gave this frog the name the vampire flying frog. What was most remarkable about this new species that my colleagues and I discovered and named was actually its little tadpole. And what the vampire flying frog does is, again, as you can imagine, it's moving around in the canopy of the forest, and it actually it lays its eggs in water-filled tree holes. And, you know, frog species all over the world go to great efforts to find places to put their eggs or their larvae, their tadpoles, in places where they'll be safe from predators. Frog eggs and frog tadpoles tend to be nice things to eat by insects and snakes and fish and other predators. And what the vampire flying frog does is it finds these little water-filled tree holes, and it lays a nest. It lays a foam nest there, and deposits its eggs inside the foam nest. And when the eggs hatch, the little tadpoles fall out of the foam and drop down into the water in the tree hole. Now, this is a very safe place. This is a wonderful nursery to keep your tadpoles safe from predators high up in a water-filled tree hole in the forest. The problem is there isn't a whole lot for the tadpoles to eat. And so the vampire flying frog, what it has done to overcome this lack of food in these tree holes is the mother vampire flying frog actually visits the tree hole where her tadpoles are living and lays unfertilized eggs into the tree hole. And the tadpole feeds on those eggs. And the reason we gave it this frog the name the vampire flying frog is because those little tadpoles have a structure, two fangs, or they're two keratinous hooks that are protruding from the lower lip of the tadpole. And these little fangs are not seen in any other known tadpole, in any other frog anywhere in the world. And it turns out that that little tadpole is faced with somewhat of an eating challenge. It would be as if you had no arms and I were going to try to feed you a beach ball. These eggs are quite large and these tadpoles are quite small. And what they do is they use these fangs on their lower lip to actually grab a hold of these unfertilized eggs that mom has laid there for them to eat. And then they have an ability to grasp this big egg and then to go ahead and devour it.
Wow. So, and it's only the tadpole that has these little fangs. Then they lose them when they go into froghood, huh?
That's exactly right. As the tadpole, the late stage tadpoles, as the tadpoles grow to a large size and as they begin to change into a frog, they lose those fangs.
It's kind of interesting because you saw the fangs but weren't quite sure what they were for initially, right?
That's exactly right. So when we initially discovered and named the species as a new species to science, we had the adult frog. And we had the little tadpole, and it had these remarkable fang-like structures on its lips. But it was really a mystery as to what the function of those fangs were. And it's only through some very diligent follow-up work by my colleagues, particularly a graduate student in Vietnam, who have solved the mystery as to what those little fangs are for.
Let me ask you how you did that. Were you putting cameras in those little tiny holes? How did you find out what they were doing after they were born?
What she made observations of the tadpoles, and what she realized is as she found more and more tadpoles that their little bellies were filled with unfertilized eggs of the same species. And so through observation, she was able to realize that not only do the tadpoles eat these unfertilized eggs that mom leaves for them, but that they use these little fangs for grasping the eggs.
So fang tadpoles seem to be unique, at least at the moment. What about the ability to fly? How many species can do that? And is there anything unique in the ability of these particular frogs to fly? Are they better or glide, I should say?
Well, there's this particular group of frogs and this genus of frogs, as we call it, which is a group of closely related species, they occur only in Asia, in tropical parts of Asia. And there are roughly 40 species in that group, and they all have the ability those species that have the extended webbing on their hands and feet have this ability to glide from one tree to the next. It's really, really amazing. One of the wonderful things about being a herpetologist and spending time in tropical forests of Asia is you not only there are a lot of the organisms that you're interested in actually are flying or gliding around you. So we have gliding frogs, as we've been talking about, and there are gliding lizards, there are gliding geckos, and there are even gliding snakes.
Sounds great. Well, we're going to turn now from fanged frogs to vampire squid. Which is neither a vampire nor a squid, but Trish Weaver is the collections manager of the geology and paleontology here at the Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh. Trish Weaver, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Hi, Frank.
Thanks
for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you, and you're wearing your squid hat. And
yes, I am.
It's fantastic. It really is. It's great, although it's not a vampire squid, right?
No, but I have some teeth I could put in, and then I could be a vampire squid if you'd like.
How did the vampire squid get its name?
The vampire squid got its name. It was trawled up back in 1903 on a research vessel. It came up in a net. And the reason it's called a vampire squid is it's got a webbing between its arms, which looks like a cape. It's got a bright white beak and glowing red eyes in certain light. So the person who named it decided to name it Vampirotuthis infernalis, the vampire squid from hell.
And is this a particularly beastly predator?
No, it's actually very docile. It's a detritivore, though it's capable.
It only eats Detroit?
Yeah, it only eats Detroit.
I see.
And who can blame them?
Not much nutrition there. Go ahead.
No.
Go ahead.
What they do generally, though, they are capable of catching small prey, crustaceans and whatnot. Basically, they have two long filaments that come out of their arms. In between their arms, there's these two long filaments, and they will dangle one out like a fishing line. And what happens is goo from above floats down and gets caught on this filament. And so basically what they're eating is dead bodies, animals dying and floating down through the water column. They're eating poop from small crustaceans, and they're eating snot, which is from gelatinous larvations. And what they do is they take the filament and they run it through their arms, and their arms secrete mucus. So what happens is they make a big ball of goo as they're scraping off the filament, and then they shove the goo in their beaks. And
well,
that's what they eat.
You heard about the vampire squid and its lunch, and I hope you're enjoying yours today as you listen to the state of things. Well, that is kind of horrific to think about what they eat, but then again, they are. So they're sort of one of the vacuum cleaners that kind of keeps the oceans neat.
Yeah.
That's great. So how long have we known about them?
Since 1903, wow, when they were first described.
How unusual are they, and is this behavior for squids and
like them? They're not that unusual. They're found all around the world in temperate and tropical oceans, so they're everywhere, but they're deep water, so they're down 2,000 to 3,000 feet deep. And that kind of behavior is sort of different from what you'd see in a squid or an octopus, because squid will snatch things with their tentacles, and octopus frequently, sort of go over them, you know, sort of.
Yeah, they reach. Yeah, and they reach and grab a little bit. So this is a very passive kind of a diner, and it is not a squid technically.
No, it's technically not a squid, and it's technically not an octopus either. It's its own order of things called Vampyromorphida, and it's got characteristics of octopus and it's got characteristics of squid, but it's neither one. It's its own group.
And this, then, it sounds like from the name, this whole group is only we've only known about it for a little over 100 years or so.
Well, I mean, it goes back in the fossil record a fairly good piece. I mean, they find vampire squid-related things all the way back to the Pennsylvanian, but this is the only extant species of them is Vampyrotoothus infernalis.
Fascinating stuff. Trish, thank you so much. Trish Weaver is Collections Manager of Geology and Paleontology at the Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh. Brian Stewart, Curator of Amphibians and Reptiles at the museum. And for more information, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. Well, zombies never die. Find out how their story was born on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.